bays and marshes along the Gulf Coast into saltier waters where they can survive. One waterman says on a scale of 1 to 10, they are now 9.5 destroyed. Many species that depend on a brackish mix of fresh and saltwater and coastal estuaries are decamping as this year's huge floods flush in fresh water laden with pollution from farms and cities in the Mississippi River Basin. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
North Carolina's third shark attack victim this month is an 8-year-old boy. It happened Sunday afternoon off Bald Head Island, which is about 90 minutes south of Wilmington, when the shark bit the boy on his leg. His injuries are not considered to be life-threatening. The boy's name has not yet been released, and the size and type of shark are unknown. This is USA Radio News.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
A man is dead after an exchange of gunfire with Dallas police outside a federal building downtown. The FBI have identified the man as 22-year-old Brian Clyde and believe he was not working with anyone. Officers confronted Clyde after he fired shots at the Earl Cabal Federal Building. No one else was hurt, and police are searching for possible explosive devices near the building that Clyde may have planted. The family at the center of a viral confrontation with Phoenix police say they don't accept apologies from the mayor and the chief of police.
The family has described the apology as a sham because the police officers involved in assaulting this family are still employed by the city of Phoenix.
Reverend Jared Maupin, the spokesman for Drayvon Adams and his pregnant fiance, said activists and celebrities from around the country have wrapped their arms around the couple. Cell phone video shows officers pointing guns and yelling threats at Ames and his fiance, Aisha Harper, and their two young daughters after the family said their daughter stole a doll from the Family Dollar store. Phoenix Police Chief Jerry Williams admits she's angry at the viral video showing two officers acting unprofessionally during an arrest.
Outraged, angry, upset that that was not good policing. What we saw on the video isn't in keeping with what the other 2,900 police officers out there are willing to accept, nor should our community accept it.
Since the incident happened, the police officers have also been put on administrative leave, and Ames and his family are suing the city of Phoenix for $10 million. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
And I'm Georgine Trinkle. We're in the studio today, and we have a guest, so that's always nice when we don't have an empty chair. So I'm going to work on some interference noise here, but in the meantime, we're going to do a commercial, and then we'll be right back with the weather.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
All right, hopefully that's a little bit better. I know my ear is not as bad as it was, so I think I fixed the interference noise, but maybe not the problem. But we just go with it around here. So you want to know the weather, and I'm going to tell you straight out. The fact is you are not seeing the sun until Saturday. So we do know that the weather forecasts are often wrong anyway, so maybe it'll be different. We're looking at some really scattered showers and maybe some difficult weather the next few hours, although they said from 11 o'clock this morning on there'd be different showers and scattered showers, and there was nothing. So you might see some rain overnight tonight, nothing to worry about, but when you wake up tomorrow, you are going to see rain. There's light rain and thunderstorms going on all day tomorrow. 77 on Wednesday is our high with more rain. So we get a little warmer Thursday. We have a high of 78, but we do have thunderstorms again. So guess what Friday is? More rain. That's right, 76 and more rain. So it's in the 70s all week. We have our lowest temperature is Friday evening with a low of 55, but it's worth it because Saturday we get to see the sun again, and it's a beach day, 78, and absolutely beautiful. And Sunday isn't too bad either. We have the sun again with a high of 78. So I'm not going to even peek at next week's weather because I see little thunderbolts, and I don't think it's one of the Captain Marvel or something. I think he had like a thunderbolt, maybe some kind of lightning. Or it's some other character that shows that I have no idea what I'm doing. So we'll do a commercial and be back with my guest.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
All right, so we're muddling through today as usual. It does look like this keyboard has been renumbered, but it doesn't mean that I know what anything is. I just know that there's numbers now where there used to not be. So let's see if we get this right. Let me see if I can introduce my guest here.
Hi.
All right, we got you. You're on mic three. All right, so thanks for joining us. If you could let my listeners know your name.
Sure. My name is Rebecca Zeidel. I am the Executive Director of Child and Family Resources, which is the resource and referral agency serving primarily Morris County. And we are one resource and referral organization throughout the state. There's one in every county. And so that makes, there's 21 of us.
That's excellent. So sometimes I always joke that there's one county that often gets let down. I think there's even a governor that said there was no indoor plumbing in that county. And he got a truckload of PVC pipe the next day. So there are actually 21 counties. We haven't done any county mergers lately. So happy to have Rebecca on my show. So she's a friend and someone that I get to work with sometimes. And you guys are doing such great things in Morris County and supporting a whole statewide network of R&Rs. Mm-hmm. So we always talk in different acronyms, and we don't know what it means. And I often think back to the days when I worked for First Call for Help, which was an information referral program. And I think today of all the RFPs I see, all the problems we have in the community, to me it boils down to people don't know what the resources are. They don't know how to access them, if they even do know about them, and no one's following up to make sure that they have what they need or where to call if they have hiccups. And the populations that we deal with are people who have a lot of different barriers. So I guess that's why I think the R&R piece is such a critical component for people.
I think it's interesting that you say that because we often say or refer to ourselves as the best kept secret. And there's really nothing great about keeping us a secret because that means that a lot of people are not accessing the services that we can provide, right? So we don't really want to be a secret. Most of the families that participate with the programs that we offer, and I think come to us primarily through word of mouth. So this is a great opportunity to spread the word about the great work that we can do in the community. So like I said before, there's one of us in every county. Our name is a little bit different, but we all are child care resource and referral organizations. You could go to Child Care Aware of New Jersey. That's a website, and that is our state association. So you can find a complete listing of all the CCRNRs throughout the state and what their organization name is and contact information, as well as going to the Department of Human Services website, because we are funded primarily through the Department, New Jersey Department of Human Services.
And that's really interesting because recently I was trying to figure out which subsidy, which child care programs have subsidy. So if someone were low income, you know, where would be easiest to send them to? And it was so complicated to figure that out. So first, there's not a statewide referral electronic software system that you could just pop in your name and say, I live in this county and I'm looking for care for children between these ages, and these answers just miraculously pop up.
So not yet, right? And so what's exciting is with the reauthorization of the Child Care Development Block Grant, one of the requirements at the federal level is that each state does have a state website so that the process of finding child care assistance in paying for childcare, parent education, parent support materials is much more easily identifiable for families, right? So they don't have to jump through hoops trying to search for stuff. So I know that the Department of Human Services is working on developing a statewide website. But in the meantime, you could go to your local child care resource and referral agency website. And most of the CCRNRs do have an online referral search so that you could put in your name, the age of your child, the town that you were looking for care in, and you can get referrals that way. Or you could call and speak to a consumer education specialist who will help parents walk through that process, right? So it can be a daunting and overwhelming task for some families, especially for new parents or first-time parents. Right? You have this brand-new baby, and you are faced with, sometimes within 6 weeks, having to return to work. And given how things have changed in society, where maybe a grandparent or an aunt or a relative who used to live close and may have watched the child in the past, now you're left with having to really leave your child with a complete stranger, and that can be really scary for a lot of families. So what's nice about calling your local child care resource and referral agency is there are consumer education specialists who have been trained to help parents go through that process, help them problem solve, help them think about what is that you want to look for when you're going to choose a child care provider. You know, how many children are in the program? What kind of education do the providers have? What ongoing training do they have? Are they first aid and CPR certified? How many kids are too many kids in a classroom? Those kinds of things. And we give them tips and tools they can take with them when they begin their search. So there's an answer out there. It's just knowing where to go for it.
And I think that as we see with technology, like for example, I have no idea if we're Facebook live streaming or not. There's a camera, but is it happening or not happening? I have no idea. So it's like we put the tools out, but if we don't feel that we are competent enough to access them, or we feel a trepidation or a lack of confidence in accessing them, you still need that relationship. And when you're talking about, you know, putting a six-week-old child in the hands of a stranger, you need help through that whole process.
Absolutely. I think for many, the first start is online, you know, either Googling or doing an online search. But we want families to know that they can call and talk to somebody and share their concerns. And get some reassurance and find out that there are mechanisms in place to keep children safe, that there are licensing entities out there who go out and inspect and monitor. And if you have a complaint or a concern, there's a place to take that. And if you have multiple children and you want to keep your children together as siblings, that there are other environments other than just licensed child care centers, you may want to consider a registered family child care provider home so that that your children don't have to be separated by age in a classroom, that they can still be together and in an environment that's very home-like. Every family has different needs and different priorities and hours of care. You know, if you work overnights or you have odd shifts, sometimes a registered family child care provider has a much more flexible care schedule than, let's say, a licensed child care center that's out there.
And from the work I do in the community, I hear a lot from people who have children that are undocumented and are working two and three jobs, and they're second shift, and it's hard to find child care. So an organization like yours is able to help them come up with some resources?
We do. Like in different parts of the state, there are obviously different resources available, but if there's not necessarily the particular type of care that you're looking for, the resource and referral agency specialists can even help families problem solve that, right? So what other options are there? How can you perhaps utilize a friend or family member for certain parts of the day? And I think just provide a sounding board. Most times families have the answers. They just need, you know, somebody to reassure them and to play their ideas off of.
And it's also very troubling when you look at infant mortality and rates and even children in child care, different types of child care. There was one recently where a child died in the care of another provider. And it's so troubling. And you want to make sure you're doing the right thing, and you have so few options.
Right. So, you know, I think that that's always a concern wherever you are, right? And so it's like, what are the best questions to ask? How do you do your due diligence and maintain communication? Does the provider have the ability for you to check in? Do they have a Facebook page? Do they text during the day? Do they take pictures and send them to you? What do they have an open door policy? Those kinds of things. You can also look at their inspection reports. So recently, the state of New Jersey, through the Department of Human Services in partnership with the Division of Children and Families, licensed child care centers, their monitoring reports are now available online for review. And soon, family child care monitoring reports will be available online as well. In the interim, you can access those reports by going to your local child care resource and referral agency and asking them, and asking if there have been complaints or what is the most recent inspection look like, so that you can see for yourself and make decisions that are comfortable for you and your family, right?
So you could actually call your local R&R if you were curious or you wanted to, you know, before you met the provider, but you're not sure the center, then they would provide that to you?
Yes, absolutely. We encourage families to do that, right? We encourage them to go and visit and interview, right? We interview if we're going to get employment, but oftentimes, for some reason, parents, I think, are either because they maybe feel like there's lack of knowledge or they don't want to be offensive, but, you know, they don't seem to ask a lot of questions of childcare providers. And I think the more questions you ask, the better, right? Just educate yourself and hold providers accountable for the policies and procedures that they have. So go on site, walk around. We always say your best instinct is your gut instinct. So if you walk into a program and something doesn't feel right, then that's probably not the right program for you, right? Or if you walk into a program and you hear a lot of screaming and crying, right? And listen, separation anxiety happens, but, you know, there's some of that, but it shouldn't be consistent. And you want to see what are the adults in the room doing to comfort that child. And then once you do an on-site visit, by all means, follow up either at your local CCR&R or with the Office of Licensing and see if there are any complaints or violations, or, you know, what the findings of their most recent inspection have been.
I think that's great advice. And when you can hear children laughing, that's what you want to hear, right? Not
Absolutely.
Teachers screaming. You want to hear children laughing. And sometimes it's really difficult in the summer, this time of year. There's a lot of anxiety, what parents can afford. I myself worry so much about the children that had the free lunch and the free breakfast, and now they're home. Some of them are unsupervised because there's no great options. And then if you're working on things at the school, maybe you have a speech pathologist. Those things tend to stop when the school year stops, but they can be incorporated into your child care for the summer, can't they?
Absolutely. Child care in the summer is a challenge, right? And so I think that we're just going to put that out there. But there are lots of great programs that are out there, and there are lots of partnerships that are out there. I know through the I'm going to try not to use acronyms, the child and adult food program, right, that happens during the school year. They do run summer programs, so ask your local providers if they're participating in that. There's an option. There are some programs that do partnerships with either soup kitchens or farmers markets to incorporate some access to healthy fruits and vegetables for their programs. So those are all good things that you can ask. I think that you've got training that's always available to child care center staff, especially through special parents needs advocates, so that if you have a child who has a developmental delay and you want to make sure that they are in an environment where they're still going to have their needs met appropriately, you can see to make sure that those connections have been made. There's ongoing training all the time. And, you know, keeping children involved, there's a saying, it has to be in your hand before it can be in your head. And I think what happens over the summer at times is it's very easy for technology to sort of take the place of adult and child interaction. So, you know, the more that kids are outdoors, the more that kids are doing activities that require them to use their five senses, those are things that are really going to help fill in any of those potential gaps during the summer, right? So it's easy to wrap up. We get wrapped up as adults, right, on our phones, on our smartphones, on the iPad, watching TV, on a computer. It's all technology, but it's less time that we're actually using our senses.
That's really good advice. So I have to take a commercial break because we have to pay the bills around here. But I'll be back with Rebecca. We're going to talk about some specific things that she's doing with her organization when we come back. Stay with us.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, always the challenges here because I have no idea what I'm doing. So we just go with it here. So we're in the studio talking to Rebecca, who's on microphone 3, which I now know. So we're all good there. We don't have interference anymore. And we were able to talk a little bit about just some of the general things that resource and referral child care agencies do throughout the state. But I wanted to just talk a little bit more because I'm familiar with your organization and so many of the great programs, and your staff are amazing. They really are, they're so knowledgeable and they're so willing to share their knowledge. And there's one program in particular that I just love, your diaper bank program. Yeah. I was wondering if we could talk about that.
Sure, thanks. So we started our diaper bank program about 11 years ago now, I want to say, although time is flying, so maybe it might have even been longer. It is. I next month I'll be 15 years at Child and Family Resources. So maybe it's 15 years. So before I was the executive director, we had Kathy Ross was my predecessor. And one of the things that we do as a CCRNR is we manage the child care subsidy program for the state of New Jersey. So families who need assistance paying for child care, we assist with that process. So we had a parent come into our office who was filling out an application for child care assistance. And in conversation, she mentioned that, or she asked, rather, you know, if we knew where she could access diapers. And our executive director at the time said, well, what do you mean? You know, what about WIC or, you know, what about the Office of Temporary Assistance? And she was like, no, you know, I can't buy diapers with food stamps. WIC doesn't provide diapers. I really don't have anywhere, to access diapers. And so that was a aha moment for Kathy. And she did a little research and there found out there was a diaper bank in Connecticut. So I think we were the first or one of the first diaper banks in the state of New Jersey. So that inspired her to do some research into how to address this need, this diaper need. And so as she researched the topic, and we've come to learn that diaper need affects 1 in 3 families in America today. And what is that? It's a family who can't afford to buy diapers for their child. And that means that a child is in a dirty or soiled diaper for a prolonged period of time. And if you can imagine being the parent of a young child who is in a diaper that needs to be changed and not having the ability to do that. And what does that look like and what does that feel like? And oftentimes it's a child that's crying. And if it's for a long period of time, it's a child crying pretty consistently. And when you're a parent and you hear your child crying and have this feeling of helplessness because you can't do anything about that because you don't have a clean diaper to put on them, a couple of things occur. Either, the parent becomes stressed themselves, anxious, anxiety ridden, right? And there is research that shows that that can lead to abuse or neglect, right? So that, we think about shaken baby syndrome. We think about, this level of frustration of just stop crying, but you can't stop crying because they're in this soiled diaper that they can't be changed in. And so that was really moving for us as an organization and inspired us to begin the diaper bank. So through diaper drives, through donations, really on a shoestring budget for the past, I'm going to correct myself and say 14 years, mm-hmm. We've had the diaper bank in Morris County. So we partner with other nonprofit organizations like Early Head Start, Office of Temporary Assistance, some child care programs that we know serve high numbers of families that receive a child care subsidy and or families who are experiencing homelessness, as well as homeless shelters. And we are able to provide diapers to those programs at no cost to them so that they can distribute them to their families. And our hope is that we are preventing abuse and neglect, and that we are helping to provide a healthy diaper change for children. The average child in the first year of life, especially, you're looking at anywhere from 8 to 10 diaper changes a day. You can be spending upwards of $100 a week on diapers. And if you are working a minimum wage job, that really paying child care, paying rent, food, and other necessities, it doesn't leave very much left for things like diapers. And oftentimes, I think people just don't consider that as an expense when they're, thinking about starting a family.
And I think, too, and it's happened on this show before, it's sort of an aha moment when you realize diapers aren't covered by WIC or the food stamp program. You think that if you're low income, you would have access to a basic essential need for a child. And all of a sudden, you realize you don't. And diapers are extremely, extremely expensive. And I forget what the total annual amount was a year for diaper consumption for a toddler. I know you have the
research. It's like between $1,200 and $1,500. It's a little difficult to pin, right? If you have the ability to purchase diapers at a bulk store, let's say like a wholesale type of a store. Some families have that opportunity, but those also have typically membership fees, right? So there are many families who are low-wage working families who can't afford the membership fee, so therefore they don't have the ability to access that large purchase. Some families don't have transportation. So being able to drive to the grocery store to purchase diapers, whether they're on sale and use a coupon, might not be an option for them. So they're purchasing at, corner grocery stores or bodegas or those types of, so that's the cost is a little bit more there as well. And things are shifting a little bit. When we started the diaper bank, we were not even eligible to receive donations through large companies that distribution partners. In the last 3 years, I want to say, the National Diaper Bank was established, and they have secured a partnership with a manufacturer. So those donations go to the national, and then the national can distribute to the local partners. There's still some restrictions around that. So we'd have to distribute a minimum of like a million diapers in order to be eligible to receive a donation through this mass distribution. So for small diaper banks like ours, you know, that doesn't really help us. It does bring national attention to the issue, but you still have small communities that are working grassroots level to meet the need in their area.
And also we should mention about the seniors and adult diapers that you're able to provide through this as well. So if someone wanted to do a diaper drive, it's not only for the children diapers, but also you would happily accept diapers for adults and disabled.
Absolutely. Adults and disabled individuals. I mean, you think about it as we age and people become incontinent and then we're living on a fixed income, the expense is still the same. And similarly with those who have disabilities, right? Sometimes they're covered as a medical expense, but oftentimes they're not. And so we're happy to accept donations that really serves the whole spectrum of anyone who's in need. And the one thing is that we really have to make sure that any donations we do accept, that they are factory sealed. So if you buy a big carton of diapers and you open it and you use one of the plastic sealed packets in it and the rest have not been opened, that we can accept that as a donation. But we couldn't accept something that had been opened and, let's say, a diaper removed from. As you can imagine, there are health and safety issues and sanitation parameters that come around.
Absolutely.
With that, so.
And you do take if someone wanted to designate a donation specific for diapers, but they want you to get whatever you have the most need for, they can just send in a donation and you'll
absolutely
get those.
So again, now we have the option of buying it discounted, so sometimes that's easier, and I am really proud to say that 100% of any cash donations that we receive as an organization that are designated for our diaper bank solely goes towards the purchase of purchasing diapers. We don't take any administrative percentage off of that for the diaper bank, and I think that that's unique. Might be to our detriment, but I think, you know, our commitment really is to serving the needs of those, you know, in the community and preventing any health or safety neglect kinds of issues.
Well, it's to your skills and your outreach that you get everyone on board, so you don't even have like space costs. You're able to get donated and all the costs associated with it. You have volunteers. It's really, when you think about the whole network, you know, the hub of the diaper distribution, you're able to do that without administrative costs. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It seems to be one of the programs that we have that really resonates with people. And so, listen, if anyone is interested or looking to volunteer, we're always welcoming volunteers to help with the diaper bank. It could be from picking up diapers, delivering diapers, helping us with managing inventory, coordinating diaper drives, coordinating some, you know, social media campaigns, anything. So you can contact our organization, which is, you can go to our website, which is cfrmorris.org, or contact us at Child and Family Resources in Morris County. And I think you're right. I mean, it's one of those things that when you think about, you know, children and those who are most in need and most vulnerable, the thought of a child in a soiled diaper for an extended period of time, just really, I think, attracts people to wanting to help.
It's, again, you think that these essential needs would be met, and they're not. And it is really sad when you think about it, especially children. And our seniors, you know, they may be veterans. They may be people who, you know, served on every volunteer committee in their community for 40 or 50 years. And it's especially with the seniors, it's for them, it's this emotional thing that you feel terrible. Like you really feel terrible that you're sitting in a soiled diaper and you can't change it.
Right.
It's horrible. It's really horrible. It makes me sad. But I did find your Facebook page over on our and Hunterdon page, so you're connected there. Oh, so if anyone wants to do a diaper bank donation or a drive or just do something easy and do a donation, you know, 100% of it will go for the diaper distribution. And, you know, I get a little emotional. I can't talk about this anymore. So we're going to switch topics to something totally different because we have something going on tomorrow and a project we've been working on, which I think started in August.
I know it's going really – the time is flying. I
feel like we just started it, and we're on our last quarter of our project. So I thought maybe that would be fun. We could kind of talk about the shared service project.
Sure, sure. So it's interesting when you say it that way, right? When you think about all that we did so far, we did a lot. We have a lot to celebrate.
We do, really. I was looking through, just like getting ready for the last quarter of the report, and I was like, wow, we did all this. This is really fun. I've had a great time working with you and your staff.
Thank you. So we were fortunate enough to receive some funding through the Nicholson Foundation to help do some research in Morris County on beginning a shared services alliance for child care providers. And so reached out to Georgine and I'm so excited that you were on board with working with us on this project. So we've spent the past almost year now, right? Three quarters, doing some research and finding out what the need is and what the interest is, and then also really educating, I think, is the other piece, right? The childcare community and the business community at large on what shared services is and what it can look like in early childhood education. And so I think, you know, one of the things that stands out for me is this concept of the iron triangle, right? So it's for childcare business owners, making sure that they are charging fair market rate. What is their actual cost for delivering service? That's one piece of it. And we know as an industry, childcare providers don't often either know what the actual cost is for them to provide care for a child, and or don't charge it because the cost is so much. Like, so to provide high quality childcare, it's expensive and many families can't afford it. And so providers are mostly in this business because they have a commitment to children and families, not because they're looking to, you know, retire with, you know, a sick dip in the Bahamas. Right?
That would be nice, but no, I don't think they are. There's not too many like that.
No. So that's the one piece. The next piece is making sure that they are collecting all of their revenue, right? So again, families that are late or families who don't pay a portion of what they're supposed to pay, or right, many child care providers often either let that slide or have a hard time collecting. Very, very rarely do you hear of a child care provider who turns a family over to collections, right? So there's this money that's sort of left out there, that they're this debt that they're eating. And then the third piece is charging enough, collecting enough, and now I'm going to draw a blank.
Quality.
Thank you, Georgie. And making sure that the quality of care that children is receiving is high quality. And high quality seems to be a little bit of a buzzword, but there's so much research out there now that shows that, you know, about 80% of the adult brain is formed between birth and age 3, which is pretty amazing to me, right? That my brain capacity is almost completely formed by the time I'm 3 years old. And so it just highlights how critical those first 3 years of life really are and the experiences that children have during that time. You know, after age 3 and then when children hit, I think that's the third grade mark, the brain starts to prune itself and the wiring becomes hardened and then we're established for lifelong learning. But those most early experiences are critical. So you want to make sure that children are in the best quality child care program so that we're building strong brains for future learning. So that's that piece of it. I think the other piece that we have is, so child care is expensive, right? I mean, the only source of revenue for a child care provider is tuition, right? It's they're not a business that's selling product. It's they're providing a service. And so if you think for a minute, you know, and I'm going to say something very broadly and generally, right?
And so we shouldn't be...
Don't hold me to it, but just so conceptually.
I'll go with you. Okay.
Here's the challenge. Let's say, for example, we'll talk about infants, right? So the state of New Jersey limits the number of infants, which is, say, 0 to 18 months old, to four infants to one adult. That's the minimum standard for licensing, four infants for one adult. Now, let's say, you know, we wanted to pay that caregiver a livable wage, which is what?
Like $22 an hour?
Right. So let's say we want someone to, if we threw out $40,000 a year, not a, you know, right? So you've got four babies. That means minimally you're starting at least $10,000 a year in tuition for each of those children to just cover a salary of $40,000 for one adult, right? That's not including benefits, not including overhead, space, right? So it's expensive, right? I mean, I know in Morris County, the average cost of care for an infant is more than the community college tuition. It's like $13,000 a year. So this is the problem. Like, how do you solve this? How do we not charge tuition rates that are so exorbitant that families can't afford? You know, especially young families who are starting out. You know, when we think about sending our kids to college, we've got college funds and we're saving, right? And there's time. There's 18 years to get there, right?
What are you saying, Rebecca?
Not for a newborn.
People don't plan 18 years in advance for that.
To
really?
Pay for childcare, no. So it's like, oh my God.
Not even 18 seconds, right?
That's
sometimes.
Right. Maybe a year if you've heard this.
Yeah,
right? You're thinking, oh no, I'm expecting I should start saving. But so that's the challenge. So what we're looking at doing is, how do we provide high quality childcare that's affordable for families to access, and also provide a livable wage for those who choose this as a career? And given how valuable and important this job is, because they're building kids' brains, right? And help support these business owners. Like, this is the dilemma. So that's really what we're trying to look at doing with shared services, right? Is trying to create opportunities to leverage resources, to connect those who work in this industry in a way that they can identify some cost savings, reallocate some funds, repurpose some funds, reinvest funds, so that we can maintain this sort of balance in accessibility, affordability, and quality. Is that?
That's perfectly said. Good job,
thanks.
Rebecca.
I only had three quarters.
I know. We should have gotten our caffeine a little earlier, mm-hmm. I think. I think what's maybe the challenge for childcare industry, and sometimes with nonprofits too, so you need a business model. And in nonprofits, we if you're running a nonprofit, you have to at least pay for the costs to do business. But we don't spend enough time trying to determine what that cost of doing business is. And if you're spending time with children or you're spending time helping people, you want to think that philosophically, whatever it takes is the mindset. Okay, one more child, whatever it takes. But down the road and long term, that doesn't sustain us.
Right.
And then if you're a nonprofit, then you have programs that you can no longer afford to deliver, and people who won't have any services at all. Or if you're a childcare provider, your entire business model could be suspect to being able to stay in business long term. So it may be difficult, and it may be a different type of learning and education to try to figure out what a unit cost is and what is the cost of delivering a service. But for the long-term future and viability, these things have to be done and they have to be calculated.
Right. I think it's so critical. I think especially now that we have more research now. So we know now more than ever how valuable and critically important high-quality early childhood education is. And so at the same time, it's a field that's been starved, quite honestly. It's one of the lowest-paying industries. So, you know, the struggle that's happening right now is we have teachers who have been in the field for a long time, or who just entered the field but can't sustain. They can't pay back a student loan, making, you know, I think we're being generous at saying 20, you know, we were saying $22 an hour.
Really generous.
I think the average minimum wage, I mean, so now that minimum wage is in the process of going up, at the very least, at some point in the next 2 years, right, we'll have a baseline of $15 an hour. But even then, you're talking about people who have been working in this industry for 10, 15, 20 years who weren't making $15 an hour, right? And so they leave. So then you get these high qualified, you know, you invest in professional development and these phenomenal relationships that they build for continuity and care, because it's such a relationship-based growth process. Then they're leaving the industry. It's a sad time when someone can make more money working in retail than they can in working with young children, right? And sort of tying it back to what we were talking about earlier, you've got families who are like, this is their most precious commodity, right? It's like you're putting your child in the hands of someone to care for them. You want them to be highly qualified. And many of them have no health benefits. Many of them have no paid time off and are just barely making over minimum wage. So it's a challenge.
Well, I didn't think we were going to get depressed again, but apparently we are, Rebecca. So before I start crying, I'm going to do a commercial break, and then we'll be back again in the studio. So I promise.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys.
This is really topical. And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we're back in the studio. We're going to do some positive.
Light, something
yeah.
Light.
So apparently Rebecca's not talking. I am muting her mic. That's it. That's the end of it. No, so it's just the reality of the situation is it really, it's just really depressing when you think about it and the challenges people have and even like the parents who can't afford, you know, maybe they want to pay someone $25 an hour and they can't afford because they're making $14 an hour.
You know what's interesting though, Georgine? It's like, but I don't find my work depressing in any way, shape, or form. I really don't. I find such joy and sad. I think because I see the opportunity, right? And I think that's the positive part of it, right? Is there is opportunity. And I think projects like shared services are great because it's giving us a chance to provide the support to this community, this industry that's much needed. And for the first time in a really long time, I think that early childhood education is really being raised up. And being acknowledged for the value that it adds and that is much needed. And so that's exciting, right? And I think that there are more programs out there. There's an investment in the Child Care Development Block Grant. First time it was reauthorized in 17 years is just recently. So that's really exciting. And so there's been some more funding that's given all the cuts that had happened in lots of different areas.
Sure.
There was an increase, you know, for child care. In Head Start programs, there was an increase. So those are all, you know, great things.
they are really great. We are definitely going with that. And the professional development piece of it, you in Morris County offer so many different workshops that are free that the providers can take advantage of. And it's so fun being at your annual conference and being at the networking event that's sponsored by another foundation, funds that you secured.
Yeah.
To help and lift up the provider. So if they are home-based, maybe they don't have an opportunity to interact with other professionals. So you do something at night and they can come to that and network and ask questions. And it's really fun to see how people take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see the passion and commitment of the professionals that work in this field. And they are so dedicated to the children and the families that they serve. And so I think that's also what gives me optimism. And so we started the Milhome Foundation Business Bunch. And so on the third or fourth Thursday, I'm going to, of the month, we host a networking session for child care centers, you know, either directors and or family child care providers, and just to come out and have some camaraderie, you know, to have somebody to, you know, talk, shoot, bounce business ideas off of. And we have an expert come once a month, you know, who can answer some very precise questions, whether it's business related, how to do a budget, or how to manage some health and safety issues. Shared services was another topic that we had. Parenting questions, communicating with families, that kind of stuff.
And even human resources, I know you cover, because you're running a business, you have employees, there's a lot of issues there. Right. And it's fun to see the providers really take advantage of that and try to, you know, gain as much knowledge as they can as they develop their business plan and their models.
Yeah, it's that part is really rewarding, right, to see how we can lend support and encourage them to, you know, keep doing what it is that they're doing, because we do have a lot of really great, dedicated providers in our community.
And we always enjoy the different social media outreach that you do. So you did a whole series on shared services. What are some of the benefits? What it is to be an alliance? And we're kicking off something tomorrow.
Yes. So we're excited. The culmination of our work, right, is that now we are positioned, having done our research and understanding what the needs are, we're able to open up and distribute applications so that we can officially start our first Morris County Shared Service Alliance community of child care providers. So that's our luncheon is tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get lots of applications. We have a steering committee and an executive committee who will help us vet those applications so that we're working with some committed and dedicated candidates who can make decisions and hopefully implement some of the changes and partnerships and connections that we see there's opportunity for.
It is really exciting, the opportunity to maybe change things a little bit and to be part of another network. I think really sometimes you feel like you're on your own. You're doing it alone, and to be with someone to talk about, let's say you're getting playground equipment, and to, you know, have your own group of people who maybe have been through that or can talk you through that, you know, something even simple if you're using state-funded licensed child care center and you have a special grant to build an outdoor playground, you have to do an RFP. Who's going to write it? How are we going to make sure it confines with the letter of the law? Do we have to, you know, put it out for bid? All of those things. And even when you think about the opportunity to change how you purchase supplies, and that allows you to save, you know, a substantial amount of money, which can be repurposed to serve the children, you know, those are really exciting things.
Yeah, I think the thing I'm most looking forward to see is sort of the shift in relationships and dynamics, right? I think unlike most other industries, there's opportunity to partner, right? And not so much from a competition perspective, but from a community and building a community perspective. Because, you know, families have different needs. Providers offer different environments and cultures, right? So it's not about, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing some of the walls break down and the partnerships form, because I think that's really going to build strength in this community and in this industry. That's what's really going to give them the power, right, to sort of take back their businesses in a way that they're steering the ship. Because I think for a while, you know, it was regulations drove what they did, or funders drove what they did, or, you know, the other outside entities had influence in how business was being done to some degree. And now I think that there's an opportunity to say, wait a minute, this is my program, and if I'm going to waive this fee for this family, I'm going to have a funder who's going to come up behind and supplement that. I'm not going to eat it, right? Like,
absolutely,
those types of things, and that's exciting.
So we are building a community tomorrow, and I hope that you'll be able to come back and talk to us more about that. We are just about out of time, but I wanted to just take a moment to thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really enjoy working with you and your team, and looking forward to a report back from you about the Alliance.
Great, and thanks for having me. It was great.
Okay, great. All right, so that was Rebecca Zeidel from Child and Family Resource. We said we wouldn't use acronyms, but CFR, Morris County, and you could find them on the Houghton 100 and Facebook page. And that just about wraps it up today. I'm going to do our last commercial, and then you'll get the news, and we have another live program at 5 o'clock, so I hope you'll stay with us.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Egypt's former president Mohamed Morsi is dead after collapsing in court. The 67-year-old was being tried on espionage charges and was speaking to the judge when he became faint. He was rushed to a nearby hospital where he was pronounced dead. President Trump is set to announce his official 2020 presidential campaign tomorrow in Orlando, Florida. Police Chief Orlando Rolon regarding the police presence.
As far as anything outside of the norm, as you know, we have had a lot of visits in the past. We're used to these type of visits. This one is kind of unique in the sense that obviously is a national announcement that is being made. And for that reason, you probably will notice more presence, police presence in most of our downtown area, anywhere near the Amway Center.
The Amway Center does hold 20,000 seats, and the president tweeted that there's 100,000 requests for tickets. This is USA Radio News.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are your diabetes go-to. Stop by and talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
Oh my gut! We need to talk about something. Constipation, abdominal pain, and bloating. You tell yourself, it's not that bad. You take laxatives and modify your diet and exercise routine. But thinking about it all the time is frustrating. This doesn't have to define you. If your constipation comes back again and again and you don't know why, then it may be time to seek help. Go to ohmygut.info where you can learn more about your symptoms and get to know your gut. That's ohmygut.info. ohmygut.info.
The national average for gasoline has declined for the sixth consecutive week, falling by 7 cents to $2.66 a gallon. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
The market has been able to shrug off any concerns from last week's attacks by Iran on two oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. But according to Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com, there were a couple of other factors as well.
The market is still obsessed and concerned with tensions between the U.S. and China on trade, and that has continued to pressure oil, which stands at about $52.50 per barrel. That's $14 lower than the levels we saw in April.
Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg says the company should have been more forthcoming with regulators and the public when it discovered safety problems. Speaking at the Paris Air Show, Muilenburg discussed the company's reaction to finding out a safety light wasn't working as intended. That light has been linked to part of the cause of two Boeing 737 MAX crashes that killed hundreds. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
President Trump is talking about a health care overhaul he plans to introduce to replace Obamacare. Senate Majority Leader, Republican from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell, tells Fox and Friends that even Democrats have abandoned Obamacare and are looking forward to the president's plans.
Take a look at the Democrats, though. They're walking away from Obamacare and saying, well, that wasn't enough. Now they want to do Medicare for all, you know, which would eliminate 180 million Americans' private health insurance that they like. So, clearly, they're walking away from Obamacare. There's a space there for the president to advocate something, and we're looking forward to seeing what he's going to recommend.
Republicans have tried multiple times to repeal Obamacare when they control Congress, but were unsuccessful. A Guinness World Record was set over the weekend that helps our environment. With that story, here's USA Radio Network's John Hunt.
Hundreds of divers donned their wetsuits and air tanks over the weekend to become the largest group to conduct an underwater cleanup. The Guinness Book of World Records setting 633 divers retrieved over 1,626 pounds of trash at the Deerfield Beach International Fishing Pier in Florida. The official weight of the trash recovered is still being tallied, and that number is likely to grow, said Tyler Borgine, who participated in and helped organize the cleanup. Ocean conservation group Project Aware estimates that the cleanup might have removed as much as 3,200 pounds of marine debris.
For more news,